Hello, and welcome to Sesquicentennial Stories, a deep dive into the history of Alaska before, during, and after the Alaska Purchase in 1867. Our goal is to tell the story of the 49th state from as many viewpoints as possible, presenting you with some twists on stories you know, and hopefully learning something new along the way. This series is sponsored by the Sitka Historical Society and the Sitka History Museum. I'm Emmett Williams, and this is the second of a two-part episode entitled Approaching Uncomfortable History, a discussion about how to properly commemorate the sesquicentennial. My guest today is Tlingit Nation member David Kanash. In the first episode with historian Ross Cohen, we talked about the issue from the viewpoint of a historian with a history of tackling controversial issues. In this episode, we wanted the point of view of an Alaskan native. I started off by talking with Kanash about the feeling that we've heard from many people while during the series, that we shouldn't be celebrating the sesquicentennial at all, or at least that we've been commemorating it incorrectly all along.
Well, there has to be an acknowledgement. Yes, it is a very controversial issue. You'll have natives who say, we don't celebrate Alaska Day. Alaska Day is for those who were beaten into submission. And I used to be among that group. I didn't like Alaska Day. I used to poo-poo upon anybody who celebrated it. And, you know, that was a very interesting time in my life. That was my late teens, early adulthood, that I would stand on the side of the road with a sign that said, Alaskan natives had no say in the purchase of Alaska. The newspaper would avoid it, and the radio never paid attention to it. And I felt validated by that. It's like, that's right. These people don't like us. They hate us. And not seeing the picture, you know, any other way, I wasn't open to it. And then my grandmother and a few other elders, you know, pulled me to the side to talk about this. And it was a real eye-opener. There were things like, at the very first, the original instance of the flag transfer from the Russian to the United States, people said that Tlingits weren't present. Well, they were indeed present. Shortly after the 1804 battle, I wouldn't say there was a peace. I wouldn't say it was necessarily, it was what it was. There were Tlingits who interacted with the Russians favorably and others. Sitka was known as the Paris of the Pacific. You had schools, universities, churches, people from various backgrounds, the colonists, the Americans, French, Russians. There were a lot of Tlingits who were quite educated in these realms by the time period as we approached the transfer of Alaska from Russian to American society. And they were no strangers to the schools and the universities. They were quite integrated at this period. So when the transfer was happening, the flag of the Russians was being taken down, and the American flag was to be put up. But during the ceremony, the flag got caught, and they could not bring the Russian flag down, no matter how hard they were trying. So they brought a ladder, and a Tlingit went on up. It was a bit of a windy day, and he was still trying to get it down, but it was still stuck. And people were yelling up, get it down, get it down. I'm imagining he heard cut it down through the wind. And so he took out his knife and cut the flag and then let it go. And it floated down into the crowd, and it landed on the bayonet of one of the guards, at which point one of the ladies in the audience that was in attendance fainted. Now, you can call it a reenactment at every Alaska Day, but I imagine he would need the CGI of like Steven Spielberg or George Lucas to create that again. And I found that rather humorous, but it also showed me that a Tlingit was involved in this. There was a Tlingit that, you know, was part of this. You know, Tlingit were present inside the fort, and they were up on the hill. And when I looked at some old photographs from the mid-1900s, there were Tlingits that were part of the ceremonies of the Alaska Day festivities. And somewhere along the line, that started changing. And I'm not certain what it was, but it had its effect, and it had an effect on me. As I had said earlier, that I used to be among those that would be standing off at the side of the road saying Alaskan natives had no voice in the purchase of Alaska. And, you know, seeing that, I had to pause and look inside and start wondering, what exactly am I looking at? Now, as a linguist and someone who loves studying history, we all know that history is never as concrete and solid as we like it to be. It's not necessarily black and white. There are many things which contributed to the events around us, and this was one of them. I had to sit in amazement that there were Tlingit that were part of this. And I keep asking myself what changed, but it helped me to look inside and realize that I can open the doors and maybe venture a little further, because without an acknowledgement, you know, there can be no healing. We need to bring healing to this in some way. And how does that happen? We need to acknowledge. We need to understand where each of us is coming from, both Tlingit and non-Tlingit. And maybe we'll get to that point where we can cross the bridge to a goal of peace and cooperation. And will that happen in my lifetime? I don't know, but it's certainly a wonderful goal to go towards, especially when we're looking at a day and age where people are very divided into groups. We're right, you're wrong. And there seems to be no common ground that they're willing to meet upon to cooperate or even reach a compromise. And we need to reach that again. And I believe by giving a voice to this, we can build those bridges together and look across and see what each other's point of view is about history. Because we do both love this land. You know, those that have lived here for millennia, such as my people, and say those that are living here presently that are non-Tlingit, they love this land. They're here because they love this land. This land is not a cheap one to live on. And so it shows me that there is love here for the land.
You're listening to Sesquicentennial Stories, sponsored by the Sitka Historical Society and the Sitka History Museum. I'm Emmett Williams, and this is the second of a two-part episode entitled Approaching Uncomfortable History, a discussion about how to properly commemorate the sesquicentennial. My guest today is Tlingit Nation member David Kanash, and I asked him what's the best way for us all to go forward. And now that you're no longer the person holding the sign, and you have your opinions of your feelings have changed a little bit. Mm-hmm. What do you think is the best way for Alaska Day to go forward?
Well, that has been a question that has run through me quite a bit. Quite often, I tried understanding, you know, what was so different about us and what was so different about the non-Tlingits who lived here. And I would start sitting across from these people, asking them questions. You know, what did they understand about us? And what should we understand about them? And I think it has to start with interacting with each other. You know, if you try to just, you know, hold a cultural sensitivity class, if you try to have, you know, things like that, it may give you some tools, but we need to get among each other to learn of each other. You know, not just sit down in a class and say, well, okay, that's our cultural sensitivity class. You can go back to work. You know, if a cultural sensitivity class is part of what, you know, your work environment requires, that's well and all, but really you need to interact with the people, you know, to see that you do have common ground.
Right. So common ground, finding that common ground is...
That's a difficult one.
Yeah.
Some kid from the neighborhood, as we watched them play, and Sitka, as you know, is a very culturally diverse and ethnically diverse group, as is. And I had the kid sit down across from each other, you know, with somebody from a different race, and just look each other in the eyes for a few minutes and talk about something that you both like. And for these kids, it was gummy bears. They loved gummy bears. And I just told them, maintain that eye contact for these few minutes. After they had done that, they seemed to be very connected to each other. They connected on a very deep level. And when they made that connection, they could no longer put up a barrier that would say, they're too different from me, I will not understand them. It's rather difficult to make any, you know, to make any footholds where hatred can gather when you've done something like connecting with somebody on that deep level. For children, it was easy, you know, to get them to talk about something they had in common that they liked, because they all loved these gummy bears. Getting adults, maybe, you know, have them have eye contact and just maintain that eye contact directly to each other for a few minutes from maybe somebody from a different race. And you'll see that they do connect as well. It's difficult to hate somebody based on race alone. You know, there'll always be differences, but when they've done this, it seemed like they were handling the differences differently. It was no longer something of suspicion. They were now able to see a human and somebody who just did something a little differently.
You've been listening to Sesquicentennial Stories with special guest David Kanash. This series is sponsored by the Sitka History Museum and the Sitka Historical Society, with support from the Rasmussen Foundation, the Sitka Legacy Fund, and KCW Sitka. This series is produced by Mission Man Media. Jeff Budd is the executive producer. I'm Emmett Williams, and thanks for listening.